Welcome to Good Life. I'm Dean Wilson. I'm so glad you're with us wherever you're joining us. If you're joining us on television here in the Santa Barbara, California area, we welcome you. Our friends at TVSB, we're so grateful, especially JP. He's got to be my favorite. We love TVSB. And of course, so many of you are joining us all over the world at all these different platforms. We see you. We see you joining us. Gosh, we get notes from Pakistan and India and Ireland, and it's been so fun to see the growth over the last few years. And so goodlifetelevision.org is always a site. You can go to the YouTube channel and subscribe if you like YouTube. If you want to go to we're on X now, the new Twitter, we're there, and it's been wonderful to see just a lot of you there. And then Good Life Conversations. So if you're a podcast person, just go to any of the podcast, Spotify, or any of the other podcast platforms, and you can search Good Life Conversations, and you can listen to all the long form interviews. So we're grateful that you're with us for this amazing journey, and it's worth it. You know, focusing, dwelling, what we dwell on, it's so important in life. I'm reminded of that all the time. We get to choose what we dwell on. So we're trying to help in that regard with amazing people, amazing story, amazing visions. And this one today is kind of near and dear to my heart when we're talking about folks that are facing disabilities, challenges. If you watch this program at all, you know we have our second daughter who had a stroke in the womb, and we've faced life with her for the last 22 years, and it's been one of the most enriching experiences of our lives. You know, she's still learning to walk. Sometimes it takes 22 years. And she is a gift and such a joy, and it's changed our life for the better. And so we've had that experience. So anything that's kind of in that space, I'm so grateful for people who are doing work. And so we're welcoming back author Doug Cornfield. Doug, welcome. And then we have with us today the great Dave Clark. And so we're welcoming you both. The book that we're going to be talking a lot about is called A Pound of Kindness. A Pound of Kindness. And the website, before I forget it, you're going to want to check out is pullingeachotheralong.com. What a great name. pullingeachotheralong.com is where you can find all these books and this amazing content that we've been talking about. So welcome back, Doug and Dave. Doug, why don't you give us a little intro of kind of how you met and what this is all about?
Well, you know, you started with having your 22-year-old daughter where you were walking, and it triggers a story of me that I tell with my son who was born with neither arm. And so that's kind of how it really is one of the reasons I reached out to Dave so many years ago. But my son Gideon he was a fifth child, and he wasn't walking because of the arms, you know, it didn't have the stability to get up on your arms, and which is what the doctors and the therapist told us. And so he would scoot along on his bottom, you know, with his legs and get around. And he finally got to the point, and he had four older siblings, you know, so he was two and a half years old, and he wasn't walking yet. And he would get up and stand up, but he just wouldn't take his first steps. And so with the encouragement of his older brothers and sisters, you know, come on, Gideon, you can walk, you know, all this stuff. He still wouldn't do it. And one day his older brother was about 7, 8 years older than him, was begging father, me, for pizza. And he kept bugging me. He said, Dad, can we get pizza night? And of course, this son wanted pizza every night. And so I was like, no, Jared, we're not getting pizza tonight. And finally got to that point where I said, don't ask me again. You know, one of those kind of dad moments. And so Jared, being the wise young man that he was, he didn't ask me, but he looked down at his brother Gideon, who was sitting on our dining room floor, and said, Gideon, if you get up and walk, Dad'll take us to get pizza. And up pops my son for the first time, and he took about 7 steps. And of course, at that point, I'm stuck, you know, so of course, right. That night. And as it would be, Gideon walked for pizza. And it's really Gideon, when you're talking about the introduction for me and Dave, that I found out about Dave's story when Gideon, before he was even walking. And I was intrigued because I read an article about this Dave Clark, who had played professional baseball on crutches. And at the time, I was literally moving my family from the Atlanta area all the way up to Central New York and Corning, New York, where Dave grew up. But I'm reading in Atlanta about this man who had won the Heroes of Sports Award in the newspaper. And he played professional baseball on crutches. And of course, he's being honored, big, $17,000, I think, dollar or $18,000 check, which of course, most of that went to disability camps for kids with, for sports. But in there, it said that Dave was from Corning, New York, where I was literally moving my family to at the time. And of course, it didn't make sense. I grew up in the sports aura, in industry. My dad was in the sports industry. I was an athlete at the University of Georgia. And here I'm reading the story about this man playing professional baseball on crutches, and it makes no sense to me. And that he's from Corning, New York, where I'm moving my family to, in the midst of moving my family. Well, that was my first introduction to the man on that we're going to talk about today. And as it would be, Dave had just finished a coaching career in the Swedish League of the Major Leagues of Sweden in baseball, and had moved more permanently back to his home here in Corning that he had had with his family. And I was able to meet him on the baseball field at the on a dugout with after a game that he was coaching, with my son Gideon in my arms. And as they would say, to make the story quick and get to Dave's story, the rest is history. We met. We became friends, and 10 or so years later, I left the Merrill Lynch financial world to partner with Dave and be crazy, I guess, or a half crazy.
I like it. I love it. And Dave, just to give people a quick introduction, so you lost the use of your legs from polio in infancy, and then you just plowed through and ended up achieving, as Doug said, this dream of playing professional baseball. And then you've been a coach, a player, you've a scout, a broadcaster. You've kind of done an Olympic baseball coach. You've done quite a bit in baseball. Tell us just a little bit about your journey, what it's been like for you, the place of baseball has had in all this. Just give us a little introduction.
Dean, again, we'll go back to the beginning. I had polio at 10 months old, and I always say if there was any good to that, it was that I hadn't learned to walk yet. So I didn't know any other way. I didn't have to transition to like somebody had been in a car wreck, had already learned how to walk. Now they got to transition to using crutches or a wheelchair, whatever. I wasn't faced with that. So I just literally grew up with 4 feet instead of two. I had my 2 feet, my two crutches. And like Doug's son Gideon, who is Doug, Gideon found a way. Gideon found a way to do things outside the box that worked for him. And that's exactly what I had to do. I remember analyzing sports growing up, and figuring out where my strengths lent me to success. Was I going to be an outfielder? No, couldn't run that fast. Was I going to be a middle infielder? No, I didn't have that much quickness, agility. Okay, pitcher, first base. Yeah. Those are positions I feel like I can play. As I went up the ladder, first base dropped out of the equation, and pitcher was the only option, so to speak, that I had left. And Corning is a little town. I don't know if you've even ever heard of Corning, New York. It's a town of about 10,000 people. I found, if you want to back up a little bit, very early on, my parents never told me I could not do anything. And they never stopped me from trying to do anything outside of sitting in the railroad track with a train coming down the middle. They weren't gonna let me do that. But when I said I want to play baseball, they didn't go, "Dave, you can't do that." When I had told them I wanted to play ice hockey, "Dave, you can't do that." They didn't say that. They gave me the opportunity to find out what my own potential was. And I think a lot of times when we have a child with limitations, we reel that leash in very tight and we automatically assume that they're not able to do something. I always say, My motto is open that book up. Don't just look at the cover. Open the book up and see what the potential is for that particular person. So that was my motto. I learned what I was strong at. And I figured out every sport that we played in the neighborhood where I could fit in with my strengths. And I found out that I was holding my own against so-called able-bodied athletes. And as I grew older, the dream of back in the 60s, baseball was king. It wasn't the NFL, it was baseball. And every kid that played the sport wanted to play pro baseball. They wanted to be a major leaguer. They wanted to be Mickey Mantle. And that was my dream. And I was afraid to reveal that dream even to my parents, because I felt like nobody's gonna get behind me. Nobody's gonna believe in me, which is another thing I learned. You got to believe in yourself. Even when somebody else doubts you, you got to believe in yourself. And so the first person I told was my grandfather. And he looked at me and he said, Dave, he said, go get a job in the glass factory here in Corning. Get some security. That's what you need to do. I'm glad I didn't listen to Gramps. Because I'd have been working at the Corning glass factory. So I pursued my dream against all odds, so to speak, and I had to figure out how to even get somebody to look at me. Who's gonna scout or take seriously a 5'2" guy on crutches that takes 11 seconds to run to first base? So I hand wrote 24 letters, one to each major league club at the time. And as I sit here and talk to you today, Dean, I think about how absurd that really was at that time. And these general managers of major league teams getting this handwritten letter from a guy and reading, I got crutches and leg brace, but I want to try out for your team. Three guys replied to me out of 24. One gave me a chance. I took the chance, and against all odds, I made it and turned that into a lifelong career in the game of baseball. Wow. You got to believe in yourself. You got to, if one of the things I did, and I try to get this across to players I'm speaking with today, or even business executives, whatever, if you've got a dream, you have to be willing to put in the time and the effort, the work to pursue that dream with no guarantee you're ever going to get a chance. Too many people only work when they get the chance. Too late. It's too late. That opportunity, if you're not ready when that opportunity comes, it's blowing right by you.
That's right.
In my case, there were millions of other guys that wanted to play pro baseball in the United States. So I was out running 5 miles a day on my crutches, lifting weights, riding a stationary bike, doing 400 sit-ups a day, doing 200 push-ups a day, doing chin-ups, 25 in a set, because I had to. I had to. I had to outwork that other guy. And so when my one chance came, I knew that if I didn't make it, I could look in the mirror and say, I gave it all I got. It wasn't meant to be. But unfortunately for me, I got that shot. I parlayed it and I made it. I was never a star. I was what I call a roster filler. I was the guy, you know, there's three, four, maybe five prospects on every professional team. But you can't play baseball with five guys. So they have to get guys with commensurate ability, but they don't consider them a real prospect. But good enough to play at that, that's what I was. I played and I moved around. I'd get released, and I'd go find another place to play. And I'd get released and I'd go find another place to play. One time I got traded. I thought I got traded until Doug and I found a contract that said you weren't traded, you were loaned. You were so bad, we loaned you to another team. But it was a career that I would not. It's opened doors worldwide for me. I ended up meeting my wife as I coached over in the Swedish major leagues. All along the way, I realized, even early in my career, I realized how lucky I was to be where I was at. So wherever I was at, I was always putting on camps for kids with disabilities, any kind, mental, physical. And it all started on a whim. You know, we'd go into a town very early in my career and I'd see a group home. And I'd walk in and I'd say, hey, we want tickets to tonight's game? And they always, oh, yeah, we'll take tickets. And then I go, well, listen, you got 10 or 15 kids here that might want to come out four hours early. We'll get them down on the field. I'll get some of my teammates and we'll have a little impromptu clinic right there on the field. Oh, yeah. That's how they all started. Now we have a little format, Doug and I, that works out very well. We have pro teams involved. The pro players actually come out and work with the kids. And that all started way back when.
That's so beautiful. Yeah, when you were saying, you know, your really short guy took 11 seconds to get to first base, I thought you were describing me. That was a little bit, that was kind of my story. I was short, but I was slow, you know. The belief that I was thinking about, you know, the push-ups and the sit-ups and the pull-ups, and if you don't know if the opportunity is ever going to come, that is a staggering picture for me, because I think that there's huge lessons in that for so many people, whatever it is, whatever line of work, whatever it is you're doing, that the level of belief that goes into saying, I'm going to do this. I mean, I don't know if you actually ever thought that the opportunity was going to come or not, but you believed enough to do all that work, right?
Absolutely. And again, I wanted to make sure that if I didn't make it,
it wasn't going to be your fault.
I knew I gave it. Well, it was going to be my fault only because I didn't have the ability,
right,
to play at that level. And I wanted to find that out for myself. And to do that, I had to do all that work to be ready.
I mean, in a sense, it's kind of the term I've think about recently is like the best version of yourself. In a sense, with whatever cards you are dealt, you're saying, I'm going to become the best version of that situation, right?
Exactly.
And then chips will fall, which exactly. I think that's a powerful thing. Doug, chime in here.
Well, you know, some of the things that Dave missed, you know, because of trying to condense the story is this: the first team that actually signed Dave was in the Pittsburgh Pirates minor leagues. And the last team that traded him was in the Phillies minor leagues team. So, or not traded him, loaned him.
Loaned me.
Loaned him.
and then he also had a nice 4-year contract to play in the Swedish major leagues. And Dave talks about, you know, Dave and I, we talk about whether he was a prospect or a real prospect. And we debate about this. But, you know, he kind of does say, oh, I was a roster filler. Well, that roster filler was also the fireman of the year when he had 20 saves, 4 wins and no losses. And the Chicago White Sox were looking to bring him up. And then the other piece of information, because if there's any baseball players out here right now that have made it to even a college, you know, maybe minor league level, they're like, oh, yeah, well, how did he get in? You know, what was the catch, you know, kind of thing. And the reality is I was thinking those same things years ago. And when Dave finally told me that he was a knuckleball pitcher, then it started to make sense, because I knew he wasn't throwing the 90 miles an hour that was the standard back then. And when he told me that he was primarily a knuckleball pitcher, and if you know how the knuckleball works, you hold it with your fingers or your knuckles, and it floats like a butterfly. And when as soon as he told me that, it was like the light bulb started going off, you know. But he figured out how to throw a knuckleball, you know, and part of his training was working on every angle, every hand grip, throwing it up against the garage door. And when that thing started working, he actually has a really fun story that he tells when he started realizing, you know, this knuckleball is starting to work. And it's a story he might want to even share now because I'm teeing it up for him, so to speak.
Well, yeah, Doug's right. Again, thinking outside the box. You know, I was topping out at 79 miles an hour. And Dean, as you know, 79 miles an hour at the pro level can
Right.
be caught with a Kleenex. And so I had to figure out, how do I continue to pursue my dream? And that was, I figured out, well, let me see if I can throw a knuckleball. And it took me probably a good year and a half at least to figure out grip, arm angle, release point, all those things that worked for me. And the day I found out that I thought I had a pretty good knuckleball, my dad was a pretty good athlete himself, and he would catch me. And he didn't wear any protection except the mask, no shin guards, no chest protector. And, you know, I had a 12-6 curveball, pretty good curveball. And again, the 79 mile an hour fastball. And Dad would catch me, no problem. And I started throwing the knuckleball, and then he would catch that. But one day we're working on it, and I threw it, and he didn't get any leather on it at all, and I hit him right in a kneecap. And he's bouncing up and down on one leg and swearing four-letter words, and I'm running down, "Dad, Dad, you okay?" And you know, I get him calmed down a bit. And he stops his four-letter epithets, and he says, "All right, let's go. Let's try it again." Very next pitch, I throw him knuckleball again. That sucker moved all over the place. He didn't get any leather on it, and it hit him right in the nuts. And he doubled over, his head's down on the ground. And he's in agony. And I don't realize it because I'm in ecstasy because that pitch moves so much. And so I'm out there going, "Dad, Dad, I got it. I got it. I think I got it." And then I run toward the plate and I see, oh, Jesus, I just hit Dad where I shouldn't have hit him. And so now I go from ecstasy to, "Oh, damn, Dad, you all right?" And it took 15 minutes to get him breathing normally again. And finally, when he gets a little bit of control of himself, he looked at me and he goes, "It's the last time I'm catching you."
Yeah.
And it was the last time he ever caught me.
And
So
then you knew you had a pitch.
then I knew I had a pitch. Yep.
Yeah, I think I don't know if I may have been Yogi Berra or somebody said, you know, yeah, I figured out how to catch the knuckleball. Wait till it hits the backstop and go pick it up, you
Well, I
know.
got a story about that too. In Comiskey Park, I lost a game because my catcher missed a last out, bottom of the ninth,
Oh, wow.
third strike. It went through him all the way to the backstop. Runner reached first. I came in relief, and there was already a runner on second. So when I struck the last batter out, which should have been the last out of the game, runner went to third, batter went to first on the pass ball. And unfortunately, my next knuckleball was drilled in the gap, and we lost by a run.
Oh.
Instead of winning by a run, we lost by a run. That
Oh
was at
man.
Comiskey Park in Chicago.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
So the knuckle, that's amazing. That then there's another lesson there in terms of, you know, playing the hand you're dealt and then being smart, being innovative, being creative. What do I have? Not what do I not have? You didn't have the 90 mile an hour, and you weren't going to get it. But then
Right.
you figured
Never.
out what you could do. That's so good. That's so good. Doug, tell us about a pound of kindness. Why'd you do this?
Well, so if you go back several years now, I was when I found out about Dave's story, I was like, why isn't this a movie? Why don't people know about this? I mean, that's really truly, and it's still how I feel today. And if you're listening to us talk, you're probably thinking, why don't I know about this? Why is this not a movie? And so having an entrepreneurial background and then going into the Merrill Lynch world, I had time to really get to know Dave and get to know his story. And I said, Dave, you got to write a book. You got to get this out there. And he actually wound up trying to write a book a couple times with some other folks, got with a local sports writer and put a really good book together, on his life story. And during that time, when it finally came out, I had already read it, already helped him along the way. I mean, I'm even thanked in the book, but I was not the author of that book. But I was helping Dave get some book signings. He's a bit of a local legend here in Corning, New York. And so we set up five book signings that I marketed just as a friend, got it out there. And during that time, set up some radio interviews, all that stuff. But I was rereading the chapter in my book when he tells a story about the anxiety of when a phys ed, not a phys ed teacher, when his teacher's first grade teacher announced a field trip where the whole class would be walking 5 blocks away to the local fire hall. So I'm reading this, and as a father with a child with born with no arms at that time, I start reading and really sensing, oh man, when my son goes to school, how's he going to feel in a situation like this? And so I was really kind of taken by this story. And in the story, Dave's teacher announced this field trip where they all had to walk 5 blocks away to the fire hall. And of course, for him, that created all sorts of anxiety. And basically, if Dave remembers, he remembers about a week or two of just dreading this event coming. And so I'm reading this story, and he's in Dave's in first grade. He's got all this worry. He's not as confident as he was later on in life when he started doing so many accomplishments. He didn't even know if he could walk 5 blocks. Make the long story short, Dave, of course, the day of the event, he tries to act sick. He's not a very good actor. So if you try to tell him to act, he's terrible. And so he's coughing with his mom. His mom knows better. And as he would say, she was an old school gal. So off to school he goes with all this anxiety building up. And it's so much anxiety, Dean, that when we do speaking events together, I literally take it upon myself to make sure people aren't waiting on him. That's the kind of real anxiety that was built up from this first grade event. So finally, the teacher calls the class to get in line. He goes to the back of the line, and completely unknown to him, when he's waiting in line, thinking this is going to be the worst day of his life, a classmate of his named Ernie Pound brings up his radio flyer wagon and says, Dave, jump in. I'm going to pull you. And Dave never forgot that. So I'm reading this story while I'm helping Dave organize these book signings. But I had read it again, but every time I read it, I'd get the goosebumps. And so I'm like, I got to find this Ernie Pound. And I go to the phone book.
I hadn't seen Dean in since first grade.
Yeah, the
Oh
family,
my
we
goodness.
found out the family had actually left the area, but
They
Dave
moved to
never forgot his
California.
name, moved to California. And so I find an Ernst Pound living about 40 minutes away in Odessa, New York, near Watkins Glen area, if you're familiar with the big race out here. And I have one of those awkward phone calls. This is still caller ID time. So Merrill Lynch was probably showing on his caller ID. And you could tell when he came to the phone, he did not want to talk to me. But I told him, I said, I'm looking for an Ernie Pound who went to first grade in Corning, New York. And he didn't even want to tell me that. He's like, I'm not going to tell him this. And I just finally said, I said, you did a kind act of bringing your radio flyer wagon to school, or the Ernie that I'm looking for at this point brought a radio flyer wagon to school to help a classmate. And he goes, I remember the wagon. Didn't remember Dave, but he remembered the wagon. And I wound up convincing him to come to a book signing. And he came to one of our, it was a Heavenly Cup coffee roaster book signing that we did at one of our local coffee roasters here. And he gets in line. I see him when he comes in the door with his son. I give him a book. I said, Dave's going to want you to have one. He gets in line and finally gets in line. I got the cameras rolling, puts a book in front of Dave's nose. And Dave says, who should I sign this to? And he basically just says, sign this one to Ernie Pound. And of course, the emotions got pretty raw in that moment. And so we got pictures of that and video of that,
Oh my
and
God.
so So, then you had to flash forward several years. And when I left, I wound up leaving Merrill Lynch a couple of years after that, and started to put up a website for Dave. I actually got a speaking event. And the first time Dave ever shared that story publicly, you could have heard a pin drop. And of course, Dave got extremely emotional. And it was at the National Consortium of Athletics and Sports. It was a standing ovation after that, the whole bit. We caught that on video, and we've been telling the story ever since. And one thing led to another, and we can go on and on about this, but because his name's Ernie Pound, eventually we came up with a children's book title name and called it A Pound of Kindness. And then it even took me a while to write it. We finally got a publisher to write it the way we wanted to, and I was in charge. We were in charge of the whole project, and we wrote a children's book called A Pound of Kindness about this little act of kindness that was never forgotten.
That's amazing. Wow. Is Ernie still around?
He is. He is.
Wow.
And it's funny, when we share that story here locally, and anybody that knows Ernie, and we've met Ernie's cousins down in
Down
Florida. They
here.
come up to us when we're speaking at the event, just they come up to us, and they come up to me a lot because, I'm promoting the book or whatever. And anybody that knows this man, Ernie Pound, is completely not surprised that he did that as a child.
Is that right? That's who he was as a first
That's
grader.
yep. They just said, nope, that doesn't surprise me a bit.
And that's who
That's
he is today, too.
and then there's another kind of interesting side to all this that we found out shortly after is that so here these two men had split apart. They hadn't seen each other since first grade. 45 years later, we bring them back together, and then Ernie tells me he was a professional pitcher.
No way.
No way. It's crazy. The crazy spin on that, which I just led you to, is that he's in the Hall of Fame in New York as a horseshoe pitcher. He was a professional horseshoe
Is that
thrower
right?
in the Hall of Fame. I think he had rankings up in the top three or four in the world kind of stuff at one point. Just yeah. So they're both very unique pitchers, let's say.
Wow. Pulling each other along, pullingeacherealong.com. A Pound of Kindness is the book. I'm with Doug Cornfield and Dave Clark. But I have as I mentioned, I mean, my perspective on life has changed through our experience with our daughter 22 years ago, and the paying attention to people that oftentimes in the world are not paid attention to. It doesn't just change their life. I think oftentimes it changes ours. And when we have this, the mentality of we're pulling each other along, we're walking each other home, we're that is a powerful thing that I think this book is going to point people towards, don't you guys?
Of course, I'm a little biased to how great the story is as the author, but the Pulling Each Other Along book, it's the one of the reasons I love the Pulling Each Other Along is because we're not wanting to have a scenario where it's just you just jump in the wagon and get pulled along when you don't need to. Everybody at times needs to be pulled along,
Right.
but at the same time, we all need to be trying to pull others along as
That's
well.
right. That's
And
right.
so it's that combination that's really our heart. And one of the things that Dave and I have the honor of doing at our sports camps for kids with disabilities that we call Disability Dream and Do. And that's really our main focus at this point in life is setting up these sports camps. And for me, I get to represent, Dave Stevens, Dave Clark, because we have not, I don't have just one Dave, we got two Daves. And so I get to represent these two and introduce them to families. And say, you know what? Just because your child has some kind of limitation, struggle, challenge, whatever it is, that doesn't mean they can't pursue their passions and pursue their potential and see how far and high they can take it and even have great successes. But we at our events, our Disability Dream and Do sports camps, we came up with this several years ago. And we have an award that we actually present to people called the Pulling Each Other Along Award. And that was the first time we used that phrase. And it's the Dave Clark Pulling Each Other Along Award. And it's a real privilege because we look for the unsung heroes, Dean. We don't look for the people that won awards. We look for those people that almost don't even think they should get an award, but they're the ones that really should.
Right.
And that's kind of what we look for. And there's been a lot of emotion when we tell people they get the Pulling Each Other Along Award. We try to surprise them when we can. And we give them that award, and it's a real privilege to find those unsung heroes and present them with the Dave Clark Pulling Each Other Along Award based off of this story that we put into children's book called A Pound of Kindness.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Dave, that must be an honor for you to have that award in your name.
Well, it's interesting because the award kind of germinated. Doug's better at telling this story than I am, but the award came about when Doug called me up pretty early on in our association.
First month, really.
Was it the first month?
First full month.
And he said, you just won an award. And I said, what award is that? And he said, the Bo Jackson
Courage Award.
Courage Award, was
Yeah,
it?
Bo Jackson Courage Award.
The Bo Jackson Courage Award. And he says, we got to go to Chicago to get it. It's January, Dean. I live in Florida. I'm not going to Chicago in January. I told Doug, I said, something to the effect of,
He
tell him to
said,
give me
I don't need no more stinking awards, is what he told me. Especially if it meant going to
Chicago.
Chicago
And let
in
me tell you,
February.
we ended up going, and it was what, minus 19?
Oh, the
Anyway.
wind chills were like in the minus 30, minus 40
Oh my
scenario.
God.
Oh
And
my gosh.
so anyway, that's where Doug, when I said to him, I don't need any more stinking awards,
I said, well, why, what about us
Doug
giving an
came back
award?
and said, what if we created an award? I
I
said,
like it.
now that I like.
I love it. Encouraging people to do that. I meet people that, volunteered with the Special Olympics for 30 years and nobody knows, or I mean, that is an opportunity to honor people that I think is really great what you're doing.
Well, we have one coming in California, but it's a little north of you in San Jose. We're going to actually
Oh,
be
great.
doing a sports camp in San Jose. And if anybody's listening to this and they want to sponsor, partner with us and all those kind of things, but we'll be doing some nominations for Pulling Each Other Along Award winners in that area.
Oh, that's
And
fantastic.
we look forward to being able to present that. It's actually during Mother's Day weekend this year is what we have scheduled.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah, encouraging. I had a mentor one time say, I don't. Because our we're so focused, especially I think in the United States, we're so focused on achievement. He said, I don't want to just teach my kids to achieve. I want to teach them to serve. I want them to be a certain kind of person, not a robotic that just spits out, production, which I think, and I think that's very true and important. Nothing wrong with achievement, but a certain kind of person. I'm way more excited as a parent if I see my kids care for someone than just bring home an A. Like, I want them to be a certain kind of people. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I have
Absolutely.
7 children. So when I read their, my last two went to school. Actually, our first five were mostly homeschooled with a little bit of schooling in there. But I look at the comments the teachers make.
Right.
That means more to me than seeing that they got a 99 or 100 or, whatever they're getting.
Right.
Because I want to see those comments. That's what means more to me
Yeah.
as a parent.
And the kind of kid that can Ernie Pounds,
Right.
I want to, the kind of kid is going to pull somebody else along who needs it, is a, I think that's a, there's a lot of different lessons from this interview, and we're already out of time, but I mean,
Well, we
there's a
could keep
lot.
going.
No,
We could keep
I
going.
know we could. There's a ton here, and I'm honored to meet both of you and Dave. Just what you've been here in as an example and as an inspiration. So encouraging to me. So thank you for the time today.
Pleasure being here, Dean. Thanks for having me.
And Doug, thank
Thanks,
you.
Dean.
Now, we talked about this last time. We're both former Wall Street guys, so it's nice. Isn't it nice to be out? I just feel like we can breathe again.
I think I've only worn a tie one time
I
since
only
I
wear a
left
tie
Merrill
to
Lynch.
film this show. I mean, it's
Well,
something.
it was a black tie gala that Dave spoke at with the Ronald McDonald House years ago, and I think that's the last time I put on a tie.
It's so wonderful, especially on the West Coast where the market opens at 6:30, so you're in suit and tie at like 6:15, and it's
Yes, I'm
like
sure.
I don't miss that. But Doug, it's an honor, and we'll encourage people to go to Pulling People Along. com and
pulling each other along. Yeah.
Pulling each other along. Sorry.
No
pulling
worries.
Each other along.com and check out the San Jose gathering that's happening this spring. I encourage people to do that as well. And the book, A Pound of Kindness, Doug Cornfield and Dave Clark have been my guests. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Dean.
And thank all of you for joining us. It's so great to have you, and we'll see you next time.